listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 182, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Now, into the Rotoverse. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, the number one place to get your animation fix with animation addicts just like you. In each episode, we dive into the wonderful world of animation featuring Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, and everything in between. From hilarious discussions and movie reviews to interviews with industry insiders, this show's mission is to brighten your day through our love and appreciation of animation. So hop on your nerdy couch, grab some snacks and get ready to hang out with your animation besties, because it's time to swing into today's episode. Hello, hello, everybody. We're your hosts. I'm Morgan Stradling.
And I'm Chelsea Robson.
And we are joined by our guest host today, Eli Sanza. Hello, Eli.
Hey, how are you guys?
We are great. Well, I can't speak for Chelsea, but I am doing pretty well on this Friday. What about you, Chels?
Fine and dandy as sour candy.
So we are going to be reviewing a film that we've been talking about for a long time. It's probably one of our most requested movies since we have returned to the podcast. It's Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And I am so, so pumped. We have been teasing this for a few weeks, letting people know to get their voicemails in and that we're going to be finally doing this one. And I reached out to Mason. I know I promised you guys that Mason would be back this episode, but I reached out to him and he just had a baby last month. So congratulations to Mason. We are so excited for him and his wife. Yes, that's probably happening a lot with newborns, but it turns out he still isn't quite ready to come back. Granted, the baby is just a few weeks old. Totally, totally get it. So when I was thinking about, okay, well, let's have someone guest host and join us for this episode, I immediately thought of Eli.
Yeah, and I am happy to be here because Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is one of my favorite movies. And I am a big Marvel geek. So
welcome to the club.
Yeah, perfect. Exactly. I'm glad I picked someone who's actually a fan of the movie. That would have been so great. I mean, it's great to have differing opinions on films, but what I found with podcasts is that you typically are listening to a podcast because for the most of the time, it's because you like that movie. You are searching out other people talking about that movie that you enjoy. That's a blanket statement for the most part. Like, there's sometimes that movies are so bad, you're looking for other like people to rip on it. That's fine. That's a whole other world. But for the majority of people, it's like, I love this. I want to hear other people talk about what I love about so much. And so I think that's going to be really great for this episode. And in general, why majority of the movies we do, we are generally very positive about them. We are fans. And so we just like to talk about the positive things about them. So I'm really excited to do this one because this Into the Spider-Verse is really universally beloved, and we'll talk about the reasons why, but I'm just so pumped to finally be able to do this.
Yeah, no, this has been definitely on the top of my like favorite movies of the last couple of years since before we started back up again. And I have an interesting viewpoint on this one, so I'm excited to share that as well.
Ooh, okay. Well, before we get into that, I just wanted to welcome two new patrons to our Patreon program. They are our gold level patrons. Welcome Esther and Jill.
Woo! Esther and Jill!
Currently, we have three different tiers on our Patreon. We have gold, we have platinum, and we have diamond. So if you know what those three things reference, be sure to let us know in the show notes for this episode, rotoscopers.com/182, because that's a little Easter egg for all of you fans. Okay, with that, shall we get into it?
Let's do it.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's you know.
Trying to get him out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Certain things you just can't refuse. She wanna ride like a cruise, and I'm not trying to lose. Then you're left in the dust, unless I stuck by ya. You're the sunflower.
All right, so as far as our main discussion, welcome. We are talking about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. As far as general information, the studio was Sony Pictures Animation, which I have to give them a shout out because they are one of my favorite studios to work with as far as on a promotional basis. They're very good to fans, and so I really mm-hmm. like working with them. Mm-hmm. And they were in association with Columbia Pictures and Marvel Entertainment. Basically, it's an interesting like playing of catch and throw with Marvel and Sony because of the rights that were
yes.
purchased by Sony years ago when Marvel needed money. And so since then, they've been going back and forth of like, how do we do this? And I honestly think that they've done a really good job of spreading out the different properties through the different studios. Part of the deal was that Sony could keep the like auxiliary characters outside of Spider-Man himself. So that's why you see this with Miles Morales and then also with Venom. They've had his movies going around mm-hmm. and why for a little bit they were like, I don't know if Tom Holland's going to be back in the Marvel universe. We shall see. And then Sony's like, oh, please just give us money.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. So when it comes down to it, it's all about the dollars. But we're cool with it. The directors, they had some really good directors on this one. I mean, honestly, it was a star-studded just team that worked here. It was first started by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, and they started as producers on this while they were simultaneously writing and doing the script for the Lego movies. And so they were like, well, we can't do a lot of the directing in this. So they passed off the directors to somebody else, but then they kept on producing. And so they were one of the major instigators of this project. And so you have Bob Persiletti, who has been in the animation industry in story department and in other animated films since like Hercules. He was also a storyboard artist on Shrek 2, which is a plug for our next film that we are going to be reviewing. And then you have Peter Ramsey, who has had many art department credits in like 31 or so. And then he's also been in various animated films, but he is best known for directing Rise of the Guardians. And we like our Rise of the Guardians.
Mm-hmm.
Then they also had Rodney Rothman, who has had writing credits on 21 Jump Street. And then also I found interesting that he also worked for The Late Show with David Letterman before he got into film. But it was Rodney who was also a co-writer with Phil on this. So that's kind of how the puzzle pieces started. This release date was December 14th, 2018. The budget was $90 million estimated. And then the worldwide gross was $375,540,000 plus. and then
831. Fine. Finish it up.
Whatever. And hey, this movie was also nominated and won the Oscar for Best Animated Feature Film in 2019.
And what's interesting about that, it was the first non-Disney Pixar film to win that since 2011 when Rango won it. So, you know, because
oh, hallelujah.
Basically, Disney Pixar has a monopoly on animation, it seems, at least for the awards.
Yeah.
And so it was nice that this film was able to
you know, upheave Disney in a way, I guess, temporarily. I love Disney. Nothing, Disney, don't take me off your press list. But, you know, this was rightfully due because it was so good.
This was rightfully won.
And I think Incredibles 2, which came out the same year, I think it made more money. So I think I'm pretty sure it was more popular. Yeah. And so Brad Bird is a great director. So the fact that a movie from Sony Pictures Animation was able to win against that movie was pretty incredible.
Yeah, it was. I am one of those that I'm going to be shunned for saying that I am not a huge Incredibles fan.
Oh, it's you've fine. Already said this time multiple times before.
But. I know. So, like, for me, there was no question that Spider-Man won, because it was like, Incredibles was fine, but it wasn't this one. This one blew my mind.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, especially the Incredibles movie that came out in 2018, which I thought it was good, but Spider-Man was so groundbreakingly different from other animated movies. It would be crazy to ignore it.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, whereas The Incredibles, and, you know, The Incredibles 2 specifically, it kind of just took what The Incredibles did and brought it, you know, to a new story. But there wasn't anything revolutionary about it. It was just a sequel, you know, bringing that film. Obviously, advancements in technology were very important. And definitely, but there were just so many elements to the Spider-Verse that made it different and new, and they tried new things. And yeah, it just completely changed the game. And that's really why it went. So that first trailer that came out, we had known this movie was going to be made. It was leaked, you know, as part of the Sony hacking email situation that happened in 2014. So then we got word that there was going to be this Miles Morales Spider-Man film, and everyone got super excited about that. And then finally, we were able to get our first trailer, and the world's minds were just collectively blown, I feel.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and play that trailer right now.
Yeah. Gotta go.
If you want me to drive you, we gotta go now.
No, Dad, I'll walk.
Personal chauffeur going once.
It's okay.
Seriously, Dad, walking would have been fine.
Breaking news, Spider-Man saves the day again.
Spider-Man. This guy swings in once a day, zip-zaps-off and answers
to
Nova.
Accountability. Speed up. You know, I know these kids.
Yo, Miles, man, you get arrested?
Guys, don't cops run red lights?
Well, yeah, some do. But, not your dad.
In your universe, there's only one Spider-Man. But there is another universe. It looks and sounds like yours, but it's not. My name's Miles Morales.
Hey, kid. You're like me.
How?
I knew my day would come around this time.
I know it's complicated. Just had to keep my soul and freedom. You want to know what happened
to you?
I can teach you to be Spider-Man. I love this burger. So delicious. One of the best burgers I've ever had. You have money, right? I'm not very liquid right now.
I think you're going to be a bad teacher. How am I supposed to save the whole world?
You can't think about saving the world. You have to think about saving one person. One thing I know for sure, don't do it like me. Do it like you.
Brooklyn!
Stop us now. Hey, I'm all in, I'm all in. I ain't worried about a loss or a new friend. Never worried about a fraud or a new bitch. Lost love, I ain't worried about a process.
I see the spark in you. It's amazing.
Hands up!
Whatever you choose to do with it, you'll be great.
I love you, Miles.
Yeah, I know, Dad.
You gotta say I love you back.
Dad, are you serious?
I wanna hear it.
You wanna hear me say it?
I love you, Dad.
You're dropping me off out of school?
I love you, Dad.
Look at this place.
Dad, I love you.
Dad, I love you.
That's a copy.
Time to swing, just like I taught you.
When did you teach me that?
I didn't. It's a little joke for team building.
Hey, guys.
Okay, who are you?
I'm Gwen Stacy.
Come on.
How many more spider people are there?
Save it for Comic-Con.
What's Comic-Con?
Let's go!
I remember when I first saw that trailer, though. Like, the minute I saw clips from that movie, I thought it looked amazing. Like, already I could tell that this was going to be special.
Yeah. I was floored when I saw this. I was like, whoa. I honestly didn't know that it was a actual movie. I thought somebody was just like putting something really cool together. I was like, there's this is a thing. I was, because it was so different.
Oh, you just thought it was some YouTube artist or something.
Yeah. I mean, I had no idea what it was because it was so different from anything. And I just thought, well, maybe somebody's just having fun. I mean, that's really cool. They should do something with that.
Yeah. So let's talk about the art style, because I really think that is one of the things that makes this film stand apart. And they took a lot of inspiration. I mean, the color palette is one thing that always stands out to me when I'm watching this film. It's just the bright pinks and greens and yellows, and just the very dynamic contrast in colors is really remarkable. And then on top of that, they really wanted to create this sense that it was a comic book. And so they used a lot of very different and unique techniques to make it feel like you were reading a comic book, but not necessarily like the motion comics of 10, 15 years ago, where it's basically a comic book that they've like basically stretched the individual pieces of the character, so they slowly move. It's just kind of like cheapo animation. Yeah. Not that. That's not what they wanted to do, but they wanted to really invoke the feeling that you were in a comic book. And so we have the dots, you know, for gradients and darkness that we typically see in comic books. And we see, you know, they did around the edges of a character, there was sort of like line bleeding, you know, where you would see like a different color on the edge of a character, because if this was printed, sometimes that happened. Or even after Miles turns into Spider-Man and gets bitten by the spider, that's when we start seeing more of the comic book elements, like the text bubbles and the pop-outs and things like that. Those start to really amp up as soon as he is bitten. And it really, they all just come together and play so nicely together. And then on top of that, that was just kind of like the art style. You know, they have the little like motion lines when something happens, there's little wavy lines like next to their heads, or especially like when their spidey sense is tingling.
Yeah.
I love seeing that when all the Spider-Men, Spider-Women have those around their heads, or someone's knocking on the door, or like a boom or whatever. You see those visual cues, which are so, so common in comic books. But right. On top of that, they then added this other layer of animation, which it's not necessarily cell shading, but it's just a different... It's clearly, it's CGI, but just the way that it's rendered and the colors and everything, it feels flat but 3D. I have a very hard time explaining it, but I like it. And there's even certain times when they animated on an animation principle is there's 24 frames per second for animation, so you have to do 24 different poses, you know, per second. But a lot of times for Miles specifically, they would do it on twos, which means there would only be 12 stills of him per second, because a lot of times they wanted to do this to show that he was just more clunky in his movements. And then when you had Peter Parker, there's a scene where they're both swinging in the trees, getting away from the lab. Peter Parker is animated on ones, and so his animation is very smooth and fluid to show that he knows what he's doing. He's got this, while Miles Morales is on twos and he's a little bit more clunky. It's just little stylistic things that they did like that, just to kind of create this sense for the audience of, this guy knows what he's doing, this guy doesn't. They're learning, and eventually Miles gets to that point. I just, everything about visually this film just blows me away.
Yeah, and I was listening to an interview with them, with Chris and Phil last night, and they were talking about how they, from what it sounded like, they did a principle, or they did a style that was similar to Paper Man. In the way that they had these computer animations, and then they actually had hand-drawn animation on top of it as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did read that, where they would have every scene, every frame had hand-drawn touches, which
is awesome.
Well,
that was one of my favorite things about the movie, was how it looked visually. It was like the fact that it looked like a comic book come to life, kind of. It's like you said, in the scene when he's bitten by the spider, there are actual narration boxes that show what he's thinking.
Mm-hmm.
while he's thinking it. So it's just something you only see in comics and never see in animated movies. But this movie, like, intentionally tried to, it looked like it was embracing the fact that it was a cartoon. Like, and unlike a lot of, like, what Disney does, which is, like, Disney usually tries to elevate art form of animation by making it as realistic as possible. This is, but, like, this movie does a good job of embracing its cartooniness, and it looked, and every time I looked at this movie when I was, like, watching it, it looked like kind of like a comic book come to life. At other moments, it looked like moving graffiti. It looked like a painting. It looked like a, it was just really, it was really creative. It was like the art style was so creative compared to like what you normally see in animation.
Yeah. Yeah. So on top of an art style and animation that were just new and unique and something we haven't seen before, and they really took risks in doing that. We not only have those things, but we also have incredible characters that just work and you love each and every one of them. They have a fantastic story. I mean, how many times has the Spider-Man story been told? Mm-hmm. And I love the way they're able to play on that, which we can talk about. We have humor and comedy. This is a funny film. And then just the music is so right on. It's very urban and it just matches the environment of Brooklyn, and all of those elements together just are like perfect pieces of a puzzle to make this a near perfect film.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that they did a good job blending like the adventurous art style with very grounded humor and grounded like characters. It seemed like the characters were really relatable. Like they acted like believable teenagers, which is mm-hmm. an important thing, not just the art style. That the characters are the most important thing in the movie, and they nailed that too.
You know what I thought was really interesting is within the first 15 minutes, you know, I was watching the film and so much happens. We mm-hmm. are introduced to Miles. We're introduced to his family. We understand his dilemma and the struggles that he has. We meet him and his uncle, and we see him in his new school. And so this character has so much complexity to him. And then very quickly, you know, he goes to his uncle and then he gets bitten by a spider. This all happens within the first 15, 20 minutes. Yeah. And it allows the film to really kick off from that point on. And I just want to praise them on how well they were able to do that exposition without feeling, oh, this has been done before, or feeling it didn't feel rushed at all. It was completely natural. And I really, really loved that. I'm like, oh man, okay. He is Spider-Man now. I mean, not necessarily Spider-Man. He's a spider bitten man at that point, but
he's a spider character at this point.
But I thought it was great because this is something that we have seen so many times before. You know, Sony, this is their only big property. And yes,
yeah.
You know, Fox has had the X-Men, and you know, Disney had, you know, a lot
everything
of the
else.
Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxies. You know, it was supposed to be the misfits that Disney had, but they have actually turned into the even bigger things. But Sony has always had arguably the biggest property, which is Spider-Man. And because that's the only one they have, they keep rebooting it all the time. We've had the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man trilogy, which we can talk about those in a second. You know, kind of our thoughts on the different iterations of film Spider-Man. And then we have the Andrew Garfield version, which, you know, got cut short. And then we have the, again, rebooted with Tom Holland as Spider-Man, which was kind of, he was on loan to Disney for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And so how many times do we have to see a boy get bitten by a spider? You know, Peter Parker, you know, his girlfriend, Mary Jane, all these things. And so I loved, loved, loved that Sony said, you know what, let's take this a different route, you know. And they had this Miles Morales character from Ultimate Spider-Man. And that was another reason why I think this felt so fresh, because it wasn't just same old Spider-Man, you know, awkward teenager. I mean, he is still like the same.
Yeah.
The essence of Spider-Man and Peter Parker, but just a different setting, different construct, different person. And I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, well, I did like the Miles Morales character from the comics before I watched this movie. So I was interested in watching it just to see a movie about this character, like from, and that was something I'd never seen before. So that another thing that contributed to this feeling fresh compared to other Spider-Man movies.
So how did this differ from the comics? Was it pretty spot on?
You know what? There are some similarities to the comics, but it's completely a different story. Like from the one I read I read the Ultimate Spider-Man comics and I read the ones where Miles Morales was introduced. I didn't read any comics starring Miles Morales that involved multiple versions of Spider-Man or alternate dimensions.
Yep.
This was completely new.
So I want to find out, how big of Spider-Man fans is everyone?
We are
the real Brady Bros.
Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who were you again?
I played Peter. We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
If the ranking is from 1 to 10, I would be a 10.
Okay. So do you do the are you just comics? Are you all of forms of Spider-Man? Like where's your favorites?
You know what? I would venture to say all forms, probably, because I like the character no matter what I'm seeing him in. First time I became a Spider-Man fan was when I watched the 2002 Tobey Maguire film. That was what introduced me to the character as a fan. And that led me to reading the comics, and that led me to Ultimate Spider-Man and then Amazing Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man, Web of Spider-Man, and all those comics.
Yeah.
And that led me to all the other Marvel properties. Then after that, I became X-Men fan, Avengers fan. But yeah, Spider-Man was the one who opened the gate for me becoming a Marvel fan. And he is still, I think, the best character that Marvel ever created.
All right. So I have never read the comics. I've never really been a comic book reader in general, but I was
you don't read comic books in general.
In general, I don't read comic books. Like, that's just not where if I'm going to read a book, I generally end up reading books. And my love is generally in the moving parts in the TV and film side.
Yeah.
But I was a huge fan of the Amazing Spider-Man cartoon back in the 90s. And I just remember making it a high priority to make it home in time from school in order to watch it. And I was always really irritated whenever my mom was late to pick me up, because I was like, no, I got to watch this. Or maybe it was on a Saturday, or I don't know. I just remember I made it a high priority anytime it was on, because it was, especially when it got into the Spider-Verse section where you had Madame Web came out and she was taking you and bringing in all of the different Spider-Mans from all of the different worlds and versions. And there was even a Spider-Man who was just an actor, and that's really all he was. And it was just like they all had to fight together to beat the main baddie, who I don't even remember. I just remember this being a thing, and I was like, this is so cool. And then I was predictably, I would say, I had predictable reactions to the Tobey Maguire films. I loved the first one. The second one was okay. Was comparatively okay. And then the third one was what in the world just happened here? And then when they rebooted it with Andrew Garfield, I was like, okay, I'm willing to give this another shot. And then I jumped in and I was like, really not okay with how this is just turning out. It just seems rehashed. And then when the Tom Holland version came around, because they didn't focus on his origin story at all, I was like, cool, just jump into it. I like you. And then once the initial trailer of this came out, I was all on board, because I was like, this is going to be cool. It just replayed the Madame Web stuff in my head. And I was like, oh, we're doing this. So I was...
Oh, so you were one of the... You were one of the original Spider-Verse fans.
Yes. So that's cool. Where my mine is.
Yeah, I think I'm similar to Chelsea. I'm not going to rehash. She basically, everything that she said, I completely agreed. The Spider-Man TV show of the 90s really was a must-see TV for me. And I remember watching the entire series and loved it. And yeah, everything she said about the films, I I stand by and agree with, so.
Thank you. We can gush a little bit more about the art style. We can talk about our reactions to the trailer and maybe even our theater experience. So I mentioned a little bit that I had an interesting outlook on this film. And I say that because I was able to sneak my way into one of the test screenings for this film. And it was, nobody knew what film it was. You didn't know what film it was until you actually got in there, because it was like, I don't see the normal Disney people here. So it's not a Disney film, because I was thinking maybe it would have been one of the other ones. Like, actually I was thinking it was going to be The Incredibles, and we're like, oh, I wonder if this is going to be it. But then, like I said, you didn't see the normal people around. And I'm just looking around, I'm like, no, this is a very different crowd. Who is this? And then when they said, we're going to be watching the new Spider-Man, all of the fanboys were going nuts. And I was internally going nuts. I don't generally like go nuts in a theater setting, but I was internally going nuts. I was like, yes, this is going to be great. And it was. Everything about, even in those initial stages where there are different parts of the movie where you don't see the full thing, you just see a screen hold, like a thumbnail, and then you hear the dialogue. But anytime that you did go back to anything that they had done, it was just like, yes, give me more. This is, and I just knew then that this was going to be huge.
Wow. That's pretty cool. It's very hard to get into those advanced, not even an advanced screening, test screenings.
Yeah, it's really hard. What about you? What was your theater experience like, Eli?
Oh my God. This was a special movie for me because this was the first movie I ever watched in a theater with my girlfriend.
Oh.
And yeah, and she and I both loved it. And it was.
She's the one for me.
Definitely
won points at least.
Oh my God, yeah. It's like this is like officially our special movie. we both enjoyed it equally. But when I saw it for the first time, I couldn't stop talking about it or thinking about it all day. I was just blown away by how different it was from any other movie I'd ever seen before.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I didn't have the opportunity to see it in theaters, but I got a very big promo package when it was coming out on Blu-ray from Sony. And like Chelsea mentioned, she loves working with Sony. I likewise love working with Sony. And they sent us the Art of Book. They sent us the Blu-ray. They sent us a Spider-Man action figure or like a Funko Pop of Miles Morales and like some edible candy, edible cookies and things that had all sorts of Spider-Man decor. And they gave us a Spider-Man noir t-shirt. I mean, it was just the biggest press package ever. And nice. I was definitely a fan. So
they're so good.
they put a lot of effort into that. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So yeah, we talked a little bit about Miles Morales. He's important to note because he's the first biracial Spider-Man. He's half Black, half Puerto Rican. But he actually takes his mom's last name. You know, his dad's name is Davis. Jefferson Davis is his dad's name. And so a lot of people have really been confused as to why his last name is Morales. And according to comic book writer, I got this from IMDb, Brian Michael Bendis, he said that he uses his mother's last name because his dad was a secret agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. and he wanted to keep Miles safe. So later, when Miles was older and Jefferson was no longer a part of S.H.I.E.L.D., Miles was too old to change his name, which I'm like, nobody is too old to change their name, honey. But, you know,
just didn't want to.
Yeah. But I thought that was an interesting tidbit about his dad, that his dad was a secret agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. So again, just building this web.
Ooh,
excuse
so
the pun. into the Marvel universe, if you will.
Yeah, there's some heavy lore in the Marvel universe, so I'm not surprised by that fun fact.
Yeah, so I really love all these characters. You know, we are introduced to Miles, who is just, he's awkward, and he's your typical teenager. You know, what teenager isn't awkward, I guess, unless you're the typical jock. But he's in this school that he doesn't necessarily want to go to, but it's a great opportunity for him to get education. And he was able to be picked to attend it. And, you know, it's interesting to me. This is a very interesting situation where it has its own dorm as a high school. You know, so he goes there, he spends the week at the school, and then he comes back with his parents on the weekends. And so he has this roommate who is just completely oblivious to what anything else that's going on in his life. And yeah, so I really liked his dad, you know, Jefferson. I thought he just was just this great guy who you could tell really cared about his son. And there's a really funny moment when, you know, Miles is going to school and he gets picked up by his dad and he has to drive to school in the police car. And then, you know, he sends him on his way and says, I love you, Dad, over the speaker. And how horrified would any, you know, boy be in high school to have to say that to his dad? And, you know, that's why you just need to say it in the car, guys. Just always say it on your way out, because nothing hurts by telling your parents you love them.
And it can only go downhill if you don't.
Right. But I mean, there were a few moments before then, but I think that really set up the humor in this film and what to expect. So, yeah.
That was the moment when I first fell in love with the dad character.
Yeah.
In that moment right there.
Yeah, because he's... him, yeah. So it's interesting because we get some backstory on Jefferson and the brother Aaron, that back in the day they used to be kind of hooligans and they got in trouble a lot. And so ultimately the dad, when Miles was born, decided to, you know, go on straight and narrow, became a cop, obviously agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. at this point, and
<More so.
laughs> goes a completely different path down his brother because he wanted, you know, they were troublemakers from what I've read. And so one of the reasons why they didn't want to use the name Davis is because Davis was just a known name, you know, for being bad. And so he didn't want to associate his son with that name. So I prefer this one a little bit better.
I mean, Davis seems like a very just normal name to me.
Right, right. Well, it was supposed to say like they were so bad. It was like some of these mafia names, you know, where you're like the Columbo family. You just know that name is associated with bad stuff. I'm like, no.
It's but, like, oh, your last name is Smith? Ooh, I know what you, Mason, where you've been.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, so we meet the brother who is the cool uncle, right? And he is a lot of fun, and you can really see why Miles relates to him. He's not as hard, you know, a stickler to the rules as the dad is. Obviously, the dad is a cop, so he needs to uphold the law. And, you know, very quickly, he's encouraging Miles to explore his art. And so they go down to some secret place. He's like, I know a place, which we learn later why he knows this place. And he gets to,
him right there. He's like, how do you know this place? He's like, I did some engineering work here. I'm like, right. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not going to ask any questions about that, but yeah. The increases, this
Nobody wants to know about numbers and geometry. No.
He's like, oh, boring. I got enough of that at school. So yeah, then he creates this really cool art piece. And I really like the thread of this Great Expectations that is woven throughout. You know, he has this report that he's supposed to write on and, you know, read the classic book, Great Expectations, and he's really not into it. And then he kind of, his version of the report is by doing this art piece on the wall, which has no expectations. And then we see that later, you know, bookended at the end, where, you know, that's what he turns in for his piece is basically a drawing of the mural.
Yeah, it was,
because that's the classic thing with Spider-Man is with great power comes great responsibility. It's the classic line. And so they kind of flip that a little bit. The dad has a funny line where he's like, with great ability comes great.
Accountability.
Accountability. Like, no, Dad, that's not it.
Not the line.
That's hilarious. So the moment when we are first introduced to, like, Miles, when he's, like, going to this new school, like, I really love the main thing I loved about this movie throughout, really, and what made me instantly fall in love with it was how sharp its sense of humor was.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, I really love how funny it is. And the directors do a good job focusing on the humor and breezing past most of the formulaic elements in the plot and focusing mainly on just making sure the movie is funny and entertaining. That was what I really, that was one of the things I liked most about the film from beginning to end, really.
I agree. They knew exactly what kind of movie they wanted to be. And I liked that.
Yes, exactly.
My favorite thing about this film were the introduction of the different Spider-Men, Spider-Women. Uh-huh. I really think that's one of the things that is just so fun about this, the Spider-Verse, and that there's all these different versions of Spider-Man, you know, into infinity. And we get to see five other Spider-Men. Well, first we're introduced to the classic good old boy, which is the Spider-Man of the world of Miles Morales. And I really love that. I was reading the Art of Book before this, and I turned to that page where it's him, and he's really supposed to be like the all-American hero. Like, almost the way that he is drawn is kind of like a Captain America almost. He's just very fit, in shape, and everything, his act is all together. He does everything right. He has the perfect marriage. He has the perfect relationship for the most part with, you know, the citizens of the city. And
he's got the spider cave.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he is, if you wanted to be Spider-Man of all the different iterations, like, that is one of the ones you want, because he's got it going on, right? And
it's
so
like he knew exactly what to invest in. He's got a lot of money.
Yeah. And so we lose him very early on. It represents kind of the death of, you know, the uncle that is in the typical Spider-Man, you know, origin stories that really get Spider-Man to go. But this is Miles's Uncle Ben, if you will.
Well, and at first.
At first, yes. And then we actually lose a real uncle, and that kind of is definitely more important.
Yeah.
And so I it was a shock, honestly, to lose Spider-Man. Like, wow, this is where we're going. And then, obviously, with the gamma ray or whatever that fancy machine was that introduced the different Spider-Men, you know, we all start seeing different ones pop up. And what I absolutely loved, it's just one of the things that was just a small thing that stood out to me, was with the film starts out with the introduction of the Spider-Man as we know, the perfect Spider-Man, the blonde one, the very, very beginning, like, let's do this one last time. Okay. Cause they're even acknowledging, yeah, you guys know the Spider-Man origin story. So like, I'm just gonna, you know, yada, yada, yada it right here. So they do that in about 30 seconds. And then we get, every time we're introduced to a new Spider-Man, we get another origin story and we get up to speed. And what I loved is that with every Spider-Man that was introduced, they put down another comic book on top of that. And so we're building all the different Spider-Men. And at the very, 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 very end, we get Miles Morales telling his story one last time as the new Spider-Man, and his comic book cover it lays on top of all of the rest. And I just thought it was just not only a cool element to introduce the Spider-Mans and their backstories, because obviously that's a lot to unpack. It's funny, it's interesting, but then it builds to tell us who we actually care about the most is Miles, and it ends with him. And I just thought it was just so well done.
Agreed. That was really well directed. I like that element of the film and everything you just said, basically. I agree with.
Another thing I really love, worn down, fat Spider-Man.
He's the antithesis of everything that the other guy was.
Right. Yeah. Everything the other guy wasn't, he is. You know, he's fatter. He's not as motivated. He has brown hair with gray. He's older, so he's not even in his prime as far as like health and age. You know, he's just older, tired. He has a horrible, you know, he's split up with Mary Jane. It's just all bad, all bad, 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 bad. You know, even his aunt and uncle have died in this version of it. So, you know, you can see how two people who are nearly identical, they go down these different paths and how people handle different things. And I really liked, even though I wouldn't say he's a minor character, but he has his own arc as well. And we see him learning and him wanting to improve and be better. And even though we probably won't see that version of Spider-Man ever again, I thought it was really cool to see a not so perfect Spider-Man who doesn't have it all, and for him to just you know, make changes and be better and become a really great mentor. I mean, that wasn't probably the mentor that Miles wanted. He wanted the real Spider-Man. But, you know, he steps up and eventually they save the world. And then he goes into his own world and then starts to change his own personal world from there.
Yeah. Okay. So the one thing also that I liked about his character is how he kind of showed how every little bit of this is predictable. He's like, it's the normal stakes. You know, there's always going to be something and it's always, but there's always time. I always do my little thing and I get it done. It's fine. It's nothing to be afraid of, whatever. Same deal. And
yeah. One of the funniest things about the movie was how he had just, it seemed like he was basically just over it every time they started talking about these
high stakes
things that you see in high stakes, the villain's going to say you've got 24 hours. these things, he was just like, I was tired of it, and he was probably reflecting a lot of people's opinions about superhero movies. So that was really funny.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he has the moment to, and there are moments where he's like, well, actually, no, that is kind of a big deal. We should probably do that. Yeah, okay, that is kind of a big deal.
Exactly.
Like, there's this, all right, I'll give him that. All right, okay, we got to do this. But he's so relatable to everyone. He's the character that we all are in our own lives. So we all have moments where maybe we make wrong financial decisions. He felt like there was a lot of things riding on it. He was afraid. He was just afraid of a lot of things, and he didn't want to move forward in a lot of ways, which is why he's like, she wanted kids, but I was afraid, and we were moving this way, and I'm sorry, I wasn't there for you. And
we all have moments when we want to cry in the bathroom. Right. While
I got through it. It's fine.
Exactly.
I love how he was just like the entire time he's just still in his suit. Like they don't actually show his face during those moments. Like he's still just in his suit, just doing it, like crying in the bathroom.
Oh, like... his suit with the sweatpants is so funny.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh my God. That was priceless visual humor.
Aunt May, she's like, oh geez, are those sweatpants? And Gwen's like, yep, that's what they are.
I loved Aunt May. She was a boss.
Yes,
I did too.
No matter what happens in the next like iterations of this franchise of the Miles Morales, she needs to be in this. Mm-hmm.
She's
great. She is it.
She might be my favorite version of Aunt May. She might be.
How come?
Because Lily Tomlin played her like really well, first of all, and second, I just liked how she was the kind of aunt that I would want to have. Mm-hmm. If I could choose the aunt that I could have, because she was like so take charge. She wasn't even afraid. She wasn't even afraid of the villains when they came into her house. She was just like nonchalantly thinking, "Would you mind taking this outside?
Children, go outside."
Yeah, she's done this a few times before.
I know. That's why I love her.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, you know, obviously there's a sequel in the works set for 2021, and he's lost his uncle, and we don't really know much about if he has any other aunts or uncles on his dad's side, and we don't know anything about his mom's side, but I feel because of her strong connection to Spider-Man in general, she has a lot she knows a lot, and so she can teach a lot. And so I'd love to see her in future ones.
So one origin story that I wish we had more information on was Uncle Aaron, the Prowler's origin story.
Yeah.
I wish I would have known more about like what made him choose his choices and what made his dad choose his choices. And like, his was just a very interesting side story.
Yeah, I noticed while I was watching, I wish they had gone into his backstory a little bit more, because there are so many characters in this movie that they don't have time to focus on all of them. So that if I had to choose something one of the very few things I could complain about, it would be that. Mm-hmm. It would be the lack of focus on a few characters because of how little they get to focus on just a few characters because there's so many others in the film.
Yeah.
And I noticed that about Uncle Aaron. I would have liked to see more of his backstory and how he got motivated to become the Prowler.
Yeah, it's hard because we have 7 Spider-Men, including the one who died. So there's a lot going on there, and that's a lot of characters take a lot of screen time. Yeah, and then Uncle Aaron, he's such a key... He's not the main baddie, but he's a really important part and something that's the biggest threats to Miles. So it's just kind of a shame that he's gone. Especially, I would have liked to have seen... We see the reaction of the dad when he sees his brother's body and then obviously makes the connection of the suit that he's in and all of that. And it would have been nice. I don't know. There just wasn't time to explore, yeah. You know, him unpacking that his brother was a super bad guy and that he went down this one path and he chose another. And this is where it led them. It's a lot.
I'm really glad that they showed that Miles still has both of his parents, though. Like
they didn't do the Disney thing,
right? The automatic Disney trope is kill off one of the parents,
right?
Generally the mom or the dad, you know, it's
and
like,
the Spider-Man trope is to have no parents. You live with your
right.
uncle and aunt.
Yeah, that's true. So I'm really glad that they took that route and just said, no, he's going to have this. He just doesn't know how to relate to his parents currently.
Teenagers,
you know, just the teenager think that they know everything. You give them an inch and they swim all over you. I've really loved this movie. It's so great. Can we give some Gwen Stacy love?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
She's fantastic.
Really like
Spider-Gwen, by far one of the best characters. She's just from her design, she's just really cool with this blonde hair, and then it kind of gets even cooler when it has to get whacked off because of Miles not knowing how to use those spider webs. And then she's just this cool chick. The best way that I can put it. And it's funny because there is a period of time where really none of them believe in Miles. They're like, you know what? He's not ready for this. He's not ready for this. And then they really do form this bond because he's able to step up and he grows into who he needs to be. But Stacey, when she makes that first appearance as Spider-Gwen in the forest, like, oh yeah, I love where this is going. And I just love not only her design as when she is Gwen, but when she is Spider-Gwen or Spider-Woman, it's just great. Again, going back to the character design and the art direction, all of it was just spot on.
Yeah. And they took her, but then like made her, okay, her best friend was Peter Parker. You know, it was just like, whoa, mm-hmm. Okay, that's a retake. I mean, I feel like the whole like multiverse is just a reason to give validity to fan art and fan, like fan fiction.
Yeah.
Which I'm totally down with.
You know what's interesting is that there is a line of Marvel Comics called the What If series that is basically an anthology book that tells a bunch of different stories in the Marvel Universe about what if this person died or what if this person got bitten by a spider instead of Peter Parker and stuff like that. And so the idea of Gwen Stacy, who is a regular in the Spider-Man world, lives in this alternate universe in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse where he gets bitten by the spider instead of Peter Parker. And Peter Parker ends up dying instead of Gwen Stacy is I like that they went in that direction because they didn't just have characters that were just had completely no connection whatsoever. They actually took actual side characters from Spider-Man, Peter Parker's world and made them the main character. Like, and Gwen Stacy.
That's cool.
Being bitten by a spider is a cool character to have in the movie because it's a nice what if scenario.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
The other thing that I thought was weird about Gwen was, okay, if she got thrown into last week, how did she get into school so easily? Where has she been living? What has she been using for money? I'm really interested.
Yeah.
How? Considering this whole...
They kind of breezed past that, didn't they?
Yeah, they just like, no, we're not going to talk about that. She's just, she just had this thought, I should go to this school and just show up
That would not be my first thought if I end up in a different dimension. Like, let's go to school. Let's see what their public education is. Although this is definitely a private school.
Let's just go to school and let's just enroll myself into this really very private school that you have to not only test into, but then maybe win a lottery or something. And then if you're not, like, who's paying for all of this? Like, I don't understand. How does she so easily get into these?
She dazzles
really amazing
them.
Situations. She dazzled them. Yes.
I don't know. Maybe ask the directors if we ever get a chance to talk to them.
Yeah. I was like, so Gwen, how did she do this?
you're looking way too far into this, Chelsea.
The school is much easier to get into than you would think, apparently.
I don't know. You could ask, why does Wile E. Coyote never get injured in the cartoons with the Roadrunner too? Maybe it's just like you don't question it.
Oh, but I question, Eli. I question. Why does Wile E. Coyote not die? What is he drinking? Was he on gamma rays as well? This is my question. It's all one world. Oh, we're all connected.
So for the other Spider-Men, I loved Penny Parker. I thought she was, she just, when you thought this was going in a completely other direction and you didn't know where it was going, they introduced these three other Spider-Men who are just so far off from each other. You have Spider-Ham, who is just the ultimate cartoony, speaking of Looney Tunes characters, he's almost a Looney Tunes character. He has the big hammer and all the sound effects that he makes. And then you have Spider-Man Noir, who is just the serious detective from like the 1920s, essentially.
I love him.
And then you have the anime girl, who Penny Parker, who she has the pet spider who's a robot, and she just has very, very typical anime with her overreactions and her, you know, giving a big hug. And I loved it at this point. Like, this is the point where you'd be like, what on earth is happening? This is so weird, but it's so right, guys. It just works.
It really did. It, because I remember, and by the way, just side note, my girlfriend is an anime fan, so when she saw Penny Parker for the first time, she loved her.
Hard eyes, yeah.
And totally. But like Spider-Man Noir, Penny Parker, and Spider-Ham, all completely different from each other in terms of their style, but all totally memorable, and I loved all of them. They were all hilarious. And great. I don't know what the deal was with Spider-Ham's introduction when he was like, my hands are wet because I washed them. And that's the only reason why they're wet. Like, that was the weirdest.
And that's why. The only reason, I swear. Weirdest. then there's the other one where they go in and they're trying to get the goober and put it away, and they're trying to figure out all these things, and they're in the Alchem X, and he's looking Alchem X, the company, up on Yahoo, and it has 3.5 stars as a rating. And I'm like, okay, this is the world we live in. Yes. So they go in there, and I love the Peter Parker's idea of what is going to happen. And he's like, okay, first plan number one, then I got to do this. Number two, I got to do this. And then he's like, then I got to find the head scientist. And Miles says, oh, the head scientist is the girl with the bike. He's like, all right, step four, re-examine my personal biases. So all right. It's so, like, every part of this, the script was just on point through the whole thing. I felt like it was great.
Yeah, I liked how they made the humor, like, it seemed like they were making the humor the primary focus of it, which I thought was very smart, because because the writers are super funny.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you have Phil Lord, who is one of the writers, and he also did all of the writing for the Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. And I love that film. Like, he just went in, and the story on how they did that one was great too, because he's just like, so basically Phil Lord and Chris Miller, they kind of are a package pair, and they work as a team wherever they go and whatever job they're in. And they said, yeah, you know, we were going through and we were directors of this film at first, and then they fired us. And then they came back and were like, well, we've got to get this out soon, so we're going to have you come back, but we're only going to have you as a director on a renewable 3-month conditions.
Oh,
so every 3 months they had to renew that contract as directors of this film. They're just like, yeah, that was really scary. Like, oh, I'm sure. But they were able to take the humor of that film, and you can just see that that's the kind of guys that they are. In the interviews that I've heard with them, they're just those guys.
I mean, Cloud with a Chance of Meatballs, the Lego Movie, they just know how to do humor.
Yeah.
Especially in animation, you know?
Yeah.
And they know how to do adult R-rated humor too, because I watched 21 Jump Street and that movie is hilarious.
They've done, I mean, just really talented guys. They've done all of the forms in TV, film, live action, and animation. Just really cool.
Yeah. So the only other character I can think about is just the big bad guy Kingpin, and his design is really over the top. You know, he has these big, like, his neck and back are just overpowering, where he's just this big blob of a person, like almost where it looks like he would have a hunchback. And every time I look at him, I'm like, oh, my body just hurts for your body. But he's so overpowering, and he's such a big presense. And he was a really great villain, and had, you know, somewhat realistic of an idea for, you know, and motivations that were in his mind pure. You know, he was going to kill a Spider-Man at one point, and wife and child saw, and they ran away, and then they got in a car accident and died. And so he's trying to bring them back. And that's his sole motivation for everything. And that's all he cares about. And the sad part is, no matter what dimension he's in, it keeps happening, and they still view him as that person. Or at least, you know, we saw two,
right?
You know, who knows in other ones, but his idea is that he can go to any dimension, pull them, and then they just love him. But that's not really how it works. Like, you can't replace the family that you had.
Yeah.
Just like you can't replace the Spider-Man that we had, you know, with the chubby Spider-Man or the Miles Morales. It's everyone is different in their own way.
Yeah. And I think that the fact that they were able to give him such a great arc, because there's always the baddie that you can come out with and just say, he's bad. Why? I don't know. He just is, you know, he's, that's just what he is. Okay, great. Okay. In some cases, I can totally take it. All right, just accept it. All right. But then there's the ways where they actually show you what their motivations are, and you show them like why they're doing certain things, and clearly why you know clearly why it's wrong. But in the end, you can also see for him how it is motivated by a place of mourning and longing. And you can just see a different, emotion in him other than just die. I want to have power and win. Okay. So it was just really good in building that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you can make the audience feel sorry for the villain in some small way, those are usually the best villains.
Yeah. Yeah. Where they're not so black and white, where it's not, we're all fighting against the bad guy. We can kind of see why he's doing what he is. And maybe some people agree with that, you know, and that's the dilemma. But in the end, you know, this baddie is gone. And, you know, then, it, you know, quickly wraps up, and we're introduced with that last, okay, I'm going to do this one last time, you know, our Miles Morales as Spider-Man moment. And he's really carved his own path and created his own way. And he's him.
Designed his own suit.
Yeah. Yeah. Although it was very helpful that he had basically a closet full of suits that he was able to choose from, and then, you know, he could adjust from there. But Yeah, he is his own Spider-Man. And watch, and I love that moment at the end where, you know, these friends that he made, you know, it's like when you go to summer camp, you make these friends and we'll be best friends forever. And then you never talk to them again. But he is actually able to talk to these other Spider-Men, Spider-Women, which is pretty cool that they're able to, you know, go through dimensions and times to talk to each other.
Yeah, that was interesting. At the very last, I didn't catch it the first couple times I saw it. I had to, in this time I was watching, I was like, oh, wait, she's actually talking to him from another dimension. They've figured out interdimensional conversations. Cool. <Yeah. laughs> Right.
Yes. Oh, my God. I like how they put at the end, and right at the end, in case you were sad that these characters are never going to see each other again, they reassured you at the last minute that everything was going to be okay.
We all have friends.
So I asked a question to our patrons. I asked them, if you could have a spinoff movie based on any of the other Spider-Man or Spider-Women from the Spider-Verse, which would you like to see? And I've heard, and I believe, you know, looking when we were researching this film, that there is going to be a sequel, but there also will be a spinoff film. And the two answers that we got was from Rebecca. She said, Spider-Gwen, just your friendly neighborhood Spider-Gwen. Or I should sing it.
Spider-Gwen.
And then Alex says Spider-Gwen would be my vote. And I think majority of people would probably say that. It'd be, she's just so cool, so hip, so awesome. Got that haircut that rocks. Why not?
She's just also a different story as opposed to the same Peter Parker.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get many, many votes for the original Peter Parker.
Yeah. No, I would say Spider-Gwen would be the one that I would want to see a spinoff of the most, although I would absolutely watch a spinoff film starring Spider-Man Noir, Penny Parker, or Spider-Man.
Yeah.
All three of those characters. Those would all be great.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Spider-Man Noir. Okay, Nicolas Cage as Noir was so perfect, beyond perfect, and I was just so glad that was it. Because wherever I go, the wind follows.
why is his cape flapping? There's no wind in here.
Oh man!
Oh, my God, I loved when he said that. I burned myself with matches just to feel something. That was my favorite.
Just feel something.
Favorite thing he said.
Oh, amazing.
All right, guys. So any final thoughts on this film?
Hey, I heard someone once say that even if you've already watched it, you need to watch it. That's how good it is.
Yeah. So what would you rate it? Eli can go first.
What's my rating?
Yeah.
One out of five. Five stars, I would give four it, stars.
You can do half stars.
I would give it five out of five. I don't do this often, but I would give it a perfect 5 out of 5 score because everything about the movie worked well. And if there was any part of the plot or that was boring, which there rarely was, the art style was entertaining the whole time through. So it was captivating from start to finish. So I would say it was a 5 out of 5.
I'm actually going to agree with you. I don't give 5 stars hardly ever, but this one, because of the impact that it made as the art style, in the style of humor and the plot, I think that the plot was, I mean, it's hard because you're trying to get so much in such a short amount of time, and yet they kept that free flowing and made even that humorous as you went on. And you just get so many different viewpoints from this one story. You get the side of I love the fact that his mom is Puerto Rican, and the fact that they have Spanglish going on all the time. I'm like, respect. I got that. And it just shows it just so shows so much culture that just oozes out of this. Plus, it's just like a solid script. Like, they just did a good job with that. So I'm going to give it 5 stars.
Wow, a clean sweep, guys. I also am going to give it 5 stars, which is rare for me. I think of only a handful of times on the podcast I have ever done that. But I think because this really is very revolutionary in a lot of ways, from the art direction, the art style, the animation, the storytelling, and how it took a classic, you know, it's different Spider-Man. It's not the same old Spider-Man that we've heard a million times over. The music, just all of those elements together with the humor and just the characters, it all worked together for this perfect symphony of a movie that I am so glad that it's here, that it was done by Sony Pictures Animation, and that it's very representative of, you know, it gives us a new Spider-Man. It's not just the same old Spider-Man, but he's just such a great Spider-Man and represents everything that Spider-Man does. And it doesn't matter who he is. And that's his very last monologue is saying, you can be the Spider-Man, you can wear the mask. And that really is the message of the whole film. And then with this new Spider-Man and this new era, and I absolutely love it. And it's a near perfect / perfect film. So 5 stars.
Sweet.
Yeah. You know, I would just like to end my part of this podcast by saying that I don't want anyone to underestimate how significant it is that this is a movie, a big budget, like sci-fi movie with a person of color in the lead, mm-hmm. because we don't see that a lot.
Yeah.
And this movie came out in 2018, which is the same year Black Panther came out.
Right.
And that movie and this movie were both really special because I rarely ever see blockbuster sci-fi movies with black people in movies. And that, I wish we had more of it. And because every time I see it, it makes me feel like special, mm-hmm. to see it because it's so rare.
Yeah.
And I would love it if there was more in the future.
Yeah. And I think the fact that this was so well received and it did so well in the box office, and just overall, I mean, it won the Oscar. I think that's just really encouraging for other studios and even Sony and, you know, Marvel to continue to make more films like that with more representation. So,
yeah, I agree.
We have some voicemails. All right, the first voicemail is from Alex.
Hello, Rotoscopers. This is Alex Beasley. First off, I wanted to say how happy I am that you three are back together. Your podcast episodes always bring so much joy into my life, and I was ecstatic when I found out that you were starting the podcast back up again. I also wanted to give my review of Into the Spider-Verse. My opinions on this film are definitely in the minority. I believe that audiences and critics were so taken in by this film's incredible animation that they failed to notice that this film is very similar to another animated superhero film, Big Hero 6. I realize that Big Hero 6 isn't the most original film to begin with, but when you compare the two films' plots, especially the motivations of the protagonists and the villains, they are practically the same movie. Overall, I can't give this film higher than 3 stars. The animation is incredible, but Spider-Man deserves better. Bye.
Wow. Yeah, that is a different opinion for sure, but we all are entitled to our own opinions. So it's interesting to see one of the dissenters.
I mean, I can kind of see how he would compare this with Big Hero 6, but at the same time, you look at it is kind of the classic superhero origin story.
Yeah.
And they both follow those things. And it's like, yes, the protagonist and the antagonist do have same motivations. Well, I don't know about the protagonist, but I know, I can see how, you know, the antagonist definitely, you know, in Big Hero 6, he's wanting to get his daughter out of space and would like come, you know, so it's like, you have a lot of those similar scenes, I think, but I feel like it was done.
Yeah. The way the puzzles are put together are completely different, you know, mm-hmm. as far as the setting and all that.
I could sort of agree with him on the formulaic aspects of the movie, maybe. It sounded like that's what you were saying because it was too similar to a previous film. But like, for me, that didn't hinder the experience for me because the characters and the comedy sort of elevated it to like, and not to mention the art style, elevated it to like the stratosphere for me.
Yeah. All right, our next one is from Jonathan North.
Hey, Rotoscopers, Jonathan North here. So glad to have the show back, and I'm so glad you're covering some of the movies you missed while it was gone, especially Into the Spider-Verse. I feel like this is one of the biggest films you missed out on covering during the hiatus, and since, at least to me, it was one of the best animated films in recent years, I wished the podcast was around to cover it. Anyway, I'm sure my thoughts on the film are similar to most people's in that I loved the stylized animation, the soundtrack, and the incredibly creative, well-written story. I love that this is a Spider-Man who most of us aren't as familiar with, so even though I love Peter Parker, everything here with Miles just feels so much more fresh and exciting. Miles is a great character, and he's surrounded by other well-rounded, realistic characters, especially his family. And even though this is his story, I think it works so well to bring on old fans by introducing him through Peter, but not in a way that feels forced. It's just perfect. Everything in the movie, from the experimental animation to the incredible story, just works so well together. And to me, Into the Spider-Verse is everything a practically perfect animated film should be. Anyway, thanks for coming back, and I can't wait to hear you guys' thoughts.
Whoop, whoop. Jonathan is one of our Roto writers. I love Jonathan.
Yes, I love him too, because I have podcasted with Jonathan North previously, and so I know him, and he's a great guy.
He really is awesome.
What up,
thanks, John.
Thank you to both Alex and John for your comments. We love hearing all sides of the conversation, so thank you. If you would like to send us a voicemail, make sure to go to rotoscopers.com/voicemails, or you can dial 406-646-6575 to leave us a message. It's always trouble when they go too far. Nobody messing up on me. Guys, we've made it to the end of this episode. How do we feel?
We did it. I am, first off, just so excited that we were able to have Eli on this episode. I know that you've been on a lot of other podcasts, like our friend Rachel, and you said John. And so, you know, it's finally our turn to have you on.
Get our turn, Eli.
We've been waiting. No, it was a perfect movie, I think, for us to all sit and discuss. And you're such a big fan. And do you have anything you want to plug?
You know what? I am not a huge plugger, but I am a big suggester. And I suggest that if you want to hear more of my opinions, you can go to my Twitter, which is the place where I'm most active. And my Twitter is called @edunkey24c. And from there, I'll send you the link to my blog, which is where I also give a lot of opinions. edunkeyblog.com, but Twitter is my main hangout, so find me there.
Cool. We'll be sure to include those links in our show notes as well at rotoscopers.com/182. too. Also, when you are tweeting about this episode or sharing it on social media, we appreciate it. Be sure to tag us at Rotoscopers and use the hashtag AnimationAddicts. Now, to support the show, of course, you can always start your shopping using our Amazon affiliate link, rotoscopers.com/Amazon. But I wanted to plug another one. I think I mentioned this before, but I have been trying to get a part of the Shop Disney affiliate program for years, and we kept getting denied, and I never could understand why. But I decided to apply again, and they finally accepted us. So if you are a big Shop Disney fan, or you're going to be purchasing anything there, be sure to start your shopping using our link. Go to rotoscopers.com/shopdisney.
And we finally got off their blacklist.
Yay! There's been a few mentions of this, like, blacklisting multiple times. It makes it seem like we're just, like, blacklisted. That is not the case, everybody. We're not blacklisted.
It was one time.
But that wasn't Shop Disney. That was a different part of the giant conglomeration that is Disney, which, whatever. We're not talking about that anymore. So... we love you, Disney.
I don't want to give it. I don't want to blacklist again.
And to support the show and to get even more extra content of the Animation Addicts podcast, you can go to rotoscopers.com/patron or /Patreon, whatever you choose. It's also in the show notes. And that is where you can get bonus episodes. Every episode, we also include anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes of extra content, discussions that didn't make the final cut of the episode, us shooting the breeze and chatting and having even more nerdy couch discussions off air. That is all good stuff that you can get. You get the episodes ad free. You get them a day early. I can go on and on and on. And we are so happy for all the patrons that are supporting the show, and we appreciate it. So thank you, patrons.
Make sure to join us next time, because we are going to be going back into the vault. Not really. It's not really a vault anymore.
DreamWorks has a vault?
No, DreamWorks doesn't have a vault. They're cool like that. They don't vault us out. We're going to be talking about Shrek 2. We haven't ever gone through all of the Shreks. We've done the first one, but we've never done any other. So we are going to be doing the second now. And we hope to have you send your voicemail, send your quotes, comments, concerns, whatever. Make sure to be a part of that, because we're excited too.
All right, guys. Until next time, we are the Rotoscopers. Go ahead. Yeah, this is audio only. Go ahead. I think once we get started, you can just turn. I didn't even turn my mic on. I look like the living death today. So I'm like, I can't. Not even Chelsea can see my face.
Wow. we have gone that deep into quarantine life.
So right now we have three different tiers. We have gold. Sorry, I was going to say gold, medium, large. I'm like, nope, that's not right. Just a bad Grammy. No, maybe not. Cut it.
So what was something we could call this episode?
Oh, yeah. What we could call it? Man, we didn't even say Into the Rotoverse. That's something we could have had a nerdy discussion about. Is like, what is the alter versions of the Rotoscopers?
What is the alternate versions of the Rotoscopers? I don't even know.
The world would know.
Remember that one time? Okay, so Eli, you may not. I don't know if we ever said this at the time, but we had like. They're in the very beginnings. We were trying to decide on what name that we wanted to go with. And so we had a couple different names saved. And so there was one point where I was like, oh, we should just start a fake podcast and have them be our nemesis. And but then we're like, no, this would take way too much effort. And we barely have enough time to do the one podcast. But this was in my mind like a great idea.
Yeah, the things that you look back and you're like, what?
2011 2012 no it was yeah 2012 I was like, yes, this is gonna be the best idea ever, and no one will ever know that it's really us.
oh my gosh. And you said this was back in 2012
is when we started the podcast. Yeah.
Okay.
So those could have been the Rotoverse, the alternate dimension of
nice.
The
nice. Okay.
I yeah.
Let's see.
There are so many episodes. so many episodes of the regular podcast for me to get through. I was like, I don't need it.
Yeah, we don't need it. We don't need another one that we can't even handle. Yeah, with
it's fine.
Our nemesis.
Yeah, no, we're cool.
You've been listening to the Animation Addicts podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to share the podcast with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag us at Rotoscopers on Instagram and use the hashtag #AnimationAddicts. For all the links and full show notes for this episode, go to rotoscopers.com/podcast. Now, if you still can't get enough for your animation fix, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and visit rotoscopers.com for more animation news, reviews, and interviews. Thanks for listening.